Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. And today we begin a two-week series on the topic of unity and interfaith. You know, interfaith initiatives have been part of religious pluralism for some time now, and we'll talk about that. And they've been growing in importance in this somewhat fractured and divided world. It's important that we come together and understand each other. We don't all have to think the same, but there's a sense of allowing, isn't there? A sense of compassionate allowing. Last year, Unity Worldwide Ministries established an interfaith and multicultural task team to investigate what Unity is already doing in terms of interfaith, and also how we can encourage further development of interfaith possibilities. And the chair of that team, Victoria Etchemendi, is with me today, along with another team member, Ariana Platten. And next week, team members Jan Chase and Kelly Isler will be here for part two of our series on interfaith. So that's exciting to have a lot of the team on these two shows. Reverend Victoria Etchemendi has been a Unity minister since 1980 and has served ministries in Illinois, Washington, and Oregon. Victoria has served on many Unity teams and on the regional level. She's a writer and is passionate about interfaith initiatives. Reverend Dr. Ariana Platten is an ordained Unity minister also, serving at Unity Spiritual Center in the Rockies in Colorado Springs, a trained initiate in several ancient streams of knowledge. She has a doctorate in pastoral counseling psychology. She's a certified transpersonal hypnotherapist and a Reiki master, amongst many other things. She writes a weekly news weekly column, and I guess that's a bit of a redundancy, a weekly news weekly. Yeah, it's obviously weekly. Has a radio show called In Good Faith, and has served as an ambassador for the Parliament of the World's Religions. And I know Victoria's been involved with that parliament too. So, wonderful people. It's a great pleasure to welcome both Victoria and Ariana to today's show. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
So let's answer the question in general, bold terms, for those that may not have a clue. What is interfaith? Anyone want to give a stab at that? What do you mean by interfaith?
Well, for me, it's the acknowledgement that there's more than one path, that we can experience God, Spirit, the Divine Presence, the Holy One, whatever words we put on it, from many different perspectives, and that we live in a global world, and there are ancient, ancient world traditions of spirituality, and we are in our modern world today, so able to access some of that information that it's really important that we build bridges with each other and learn we're not that different. We have similarities, and that we're one people. We're one big community with different faiths.
Right, but nicely put. You know, for
and
me,
I think the only thing
I've been reading a lot of history books about the Bible recently, mm-hmm. and about the ancient Near East, and you know, the way that religions came together and influenced each other was quite remarkable. You know, so a lot of the mythology in the Bible, of course, is taken from Babylonian and Egyptian mythology, and you know, the influence of Buddha and Buddhism on the Greeks was quite noticeable, and likewise on, you know, some of the thinking of Buddhism was influenced by Greek thinking. So there was a huge Buddhist development in modern-day Iran and the Middle East, and we think, well, that's not possible, but it spread that far west, and I think Greek and Roman ideas also had gone into the East. So there was, you know, it was very much symbiotic. I think it's only in recent centuries when we've become kind of codified so much, right? There's only the one right religion, that it's become essential to think in terms of interfaith, because I think in historic terms there was a lot of interaction. Of course, there's always interaction, and there's a reaction, right? So we get the influence from the Muslims, right? A lot of modern chemistry and math came through the Muslim tradition. But then we get the backlash, you know, where we have to go on crusades to take back Jerusalem, whatnot. So it's kind of a back and forth, you know, friendly and unfriendly ways of approach to other religions.
I think it's interesting to look at that and question ourselves, Paul John, about how much is true and how much isn't true. I think there's a historic belief that religions are at the root of most wars and a tremendous amount of suffering in our world, and and as opposed to politics, and as opposed to commerce, and you know, there are many, many things that contribute to the challenges that we face now and the challenges that we've always faced as people of different cultures and people of different understandings. I think what's unique about interfaith when it comes to where we are in the world right now is that in our country in particular, interfaith is an opportunity for us to have a discussion amongst people of different faiths who are not necessarily living in the culture that faith came out of. And that's a really important piece of why, particularly in the United States, interfaith conversation and understanding is so important. Because if you grew up in India, there are certain things you'll understand about the Hindu culture that are part of how you lived. Here, if you are Hindu or exploring Hinduism, there's a lot to learn because we don't understand the base culture.
Right. Excellent point.
I have really good close Muslim friends, and we're coming to the end of Ramadan today, I believe, and celebrating tomorrow. And our friends who are from Libya say that Ramadan is so different when you're living in a culture where you're surrounded by everyone doing it, and how challenging it can be in the U.S., and how we really don't understand people that would fast and people that would do so many acts of gratitude and generosity. And so just the willingness to open our minds and our hearts to, wow, this is such a beautiful way of honoring their faith, and just realizing that culturally as well as spiritually, it all works together.
Right,
well,
absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons it's so important that this particular team is not just an interfaith team, that it's an interfaith and intercultural connections team that is looking to work together to bring forth information that goes a little bit deeper than just how faiths work together.
Yeah, because, you know, we're talking human beings, aren't we? And, you know, there's many shades and variants of those human beings. And in fact, as many as there are human beings. So sometimes it's easy to think in terms of boxes. You know, I think I understand. I've done a study or a course in in Islam. So I think I understand it now. Well, not necessarily, right? Because we're dealing with individuals. I know that if you studied Christianity and then came across Unity, it might not fit into what you'd learned about Christianity, because it's certainly not traditional Christianity. But if you understand at a deeper level, of a more direct experience level, which is existent in all mystical traditions, including the Muslim tradition of Sufism, then you might say, oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about. But it's that one-on-one direct experience that's so important. I think sometimes we think we've done the work and we haven't, right? We've studied a little bit, or we've gone to a mosque or whatever, but maybe you really haven't partaken of the core of what that particular faith or that culture has to offer. And an excellent point about it must be difficult to do Ramadan in a culture that is going around eating and drinking and doing their normal thing. There's not that thought atmosphere support, is there? So it requires more rigor, I would think, to continue that tradition. Because some traditions wash away when they're not in the culture that supports them. So it's important that we honor that. I think I don't have to be a Muslim, but I honor that they're doing that, and I feel certain amount of pride that there's a variety of cultures in my country, in my city. Just went to a Muslim Middle Eastern restaurant the other day, and it said special Ramadan meal or whatever that they're serving after the end of the fast. And I thought, that's cool. This is neat, because I love that kind of food, and I like the idea that this culture is vibrantly alive. I want it to be.
What's interesting in Portland is several of the mosques have interfaith weekly breaking of the fast, and they have people from all faiths come together. I was just reading today. I wrote down this quote when I was at the World Parliament, that one of the famous swamis, when they first came to the World Parliament, the quote was, "My neighbor is myself." And that really is true. That's when we take down the barriers and go, oh, it's not the other. My neighbor isn't the other. My neighbor is myself. And that truly is the beginning, I think, of breaking down the barriers. We can honor our differences. How many spiritual paths use prayer beads? How many use meditation and chanting? There's so many places we are connected, and yes, there are some differences, but that ability to be able to say there isn't an other, there is only myself in different reflections. That quote really touched me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to me, going back to that point of this push me, pull you, there's times of coming together and then there's backlash where we see differences. We have to accept that fact. There's always going to be times when somebody wants to go on a crusade, because we're in fear of the other. But then there's a happier time, perhaps, when we understand, yeah, there are differences, but there's the commonalities go deep, because we're all human beings, right? We want to love our children. We bleed the same kind of blood, etc. With us, there's just that commonality of the human race. So to celebrate the wide diversity, on my show World Spirituality, we've studied so much and shared so much of the world's spiritual traditions and faith traditions, and also atheistic traditions, because I think Ariana's point, the cultural connection is important too. It doesn't always have to be centered in faith, right? We can live a happy life without God, for instance, right? It's not necessary to always have God. It's important that we have some value here in whatever it is we're doing, right? Some meaning, and that's where we join together too. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about God. Your God, my God, etc. How many gods are there? if you're a Hindu, I guess you could accept there's many forms of God, but ultimately there is only one God, even in a seemingly polytheistic tradition. There's only that one essence of one source, right? One creator, one presence of love.
It's interesting. When I was in India in 2009, and I had the opportunity to tour a temple of Ganesha with one of the monks who served in that temple, and I asked him, I said, how many faces of God are there in the Hindu pantheon? And he said, oh, 30,000 at least. And I said, how can you possibly ever learn 30,000 faces? And he said, no, you don't understand. He said, if you go over there and you sit by that rock and you have a mystical experience and you come back and you tell me that you found God in that rock, then I will go there and I will look for God. I will go and look for God in any face anyone has ever experienced God. And that it was just such a beautiful expression for me of what interfaith really is, that interfaith is this opportunity to look for God in places that other people have found God and in ways that other people have found God. And we may or may not have that experience, but there's such an openness to recognizing that God can show up in a plethora of forms and fashions. And how different the world is if we don't try and confine God to our particular way of experiencing that presence.
Yeah, isn't that beautifully put?
That's one of my favorite quotes from Rumi. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. That's a Rumi quote. That has just brought me so much. Just the ability to see a bigger picture. I guess I like to use the term reframe. If you know that sense, there's only, as we were saying, one God, one face of God, one place for God, one way. But there are hundreds of ways, Rumi said, to kiss the ground and to honor the divine. So 30,000,
right.
That's we'll have to work on that, Ariana. Beautiful.
Well, yeah, you know, as there are probably as many gods as there are human beings, right, ultimately.
Exactly.
You know, I think 30,000 is a round number. It could extend to infinity.
Yeah.
What he's saying is, you know, there's something for everybody. And the good news is, because sometimes we think, oh my God, there's so many ways to touch the ground and you know whatever. I how can I learn all these ways? I'm not sure I'm equipped to do this. But the message really, the deep message, I think, of all the teachers is trust yourself. You know, you touch the ground in your own particular and special way, just like the man who had an experience at the rock, right? It's mm-hmm. trusting ourselves to experience that moment of breakthrough, moment of awareness of perfection, if you like, and not think, oh, I'm, you know, it's that's for special people or whatever. We all the special people, right? And I think that's what we're talking about in interfaith. You know, we're holding the worth in each other through extending beyond the world that we know into this larger possible world. You know, I did a sermon. I'm retired, but I still do occasional sermons. I did a sermon on Sunday about inclusiveness, and I used John Lennon's song "Instant Karma" as one of the songs in the service, and I referred to it in the sermon. But it's one of the lines is, who do you think you are? A superstar? Well, all right, you are. But we all shine on. And I love that line because it's saying, you know, who do you think you are? You are you special? Yes, you are special. But guess what? We're all special. You know, we all shine on. And I think that's we sometimes we get this idea, oh, I'm special. I found unity. I found spirituality. Oh, this is wonderful. And we sort of say, well, when other people will get to my level, they'll understand this too. But, you know, we have to have the humility to say, no, we're all special, right? There are superstars everywhere because that's the nature of God's universe.
We're talking quite a bit about India, but I also made a journey to India in 2008, I think, and I traveled with Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. And Mahatma Gandhi had such a reverence for all faiths, and I was able to be at the ashram, the last ashram before he went on the salt march. And there's just this sacred ground under this big tree where he would sit, and either hundreds or thousands, tens of thousands of people would gather every morning, 5 a.m., and every evening at dusk and say interfaith prayers. And I think that way felt across the planet. And he used it in his political life, he used it in his cultural way, in his spiritual way, and he truly understood that there wasn't one way. And so we can look at it, how do I put it to work in my life then? How do I look at this in a picture that will influence not just my faith, but all my choices?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, Mahatma Gandhi said if all the scriptures of the world were destroyed and all that was left were three chapters of Matthew 5, 6, and 7, uh-huh. which, of course, is the Sermon on the Mount, he said that's mm-hmm. all we would need, you know, to reestablish the deep connection to God. And that's wonderful, isn't it? I think you're right. Every day, I think they chanted at least part of the Sermon on the Mount each day. So... and that was part of my sermon yesterday too, chapter 5 of Sermon on the Mount. It's unbelievably dense with wisdom, you know, and the wisdom is inclusive, right? It's I didn't come to destroy, I came to fulfill. Be as large-hearted as God is large-hearted, right? It's calling us to expand beyond the ways we thought were the truth into a larger reality. And for me, that's what interfaith is. It's having the humility to look, right, to humbly look at what someone else has experienced. Like that beautiful quote, you know, if they found God there, I'm going to look at that. I'm going to honor that and see what I find. I don't have to find God in the same way as they do. That's the important thing. I have to find it in my own particular way, but I honor that they found it through their particular viewpoint, right, through that that way of being. Yeah, excellent stuff. So what about unity and interfaith? Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity, of course, were very eclectic, weren't they? They studied Buddhism and Hinduism. They studied transcendentalists. They studied mental healing and whatnot, as well as the Bible. And they were in attendance, as I understand, at the first Parliament of the World's Religions, right, which was back in 1893, where, of course, Swami Vivekananda got up and spoke mm-hmm. and brought the message of India and Indian spirituality to America for the pretty much the first time. So they were right there at a hugely important occasion.
They were, and that's always very exciting to me, working with the Parliament, and I've been on their ambassador team for about 8 years now, and it's the first time that I went coming from Unity and going to the Parliament was so meaningful for me for that reason, because I knew that Unity's co-founders had been part of the very first World Parliament and that it was highly influential for them, that it really made a difference in what they did and how they moved forward. And while we don't have a lot of documentation on what all that is about, the fact that we are named Unity, and that Charles Fillmore spoke to the fact that he gleaned the best of all the faiths he'd studied, those things tell me we're rooted in some level of interfaith understanding, at least some level in the hearts of our founders that helps us to understand that this is a natural part of our unity journey to continue to look at interfaith and intercultural relations and continue to explore the best of what is out there and available to us.
Yes, beautifully put.
Well, Charles, you know, one of my favorite Charles quotes is, "We are a movement without a creed, and we accept people of all creeds." Mm-hmm. And once again, there's the open door to me. There's the willingness to work together in a way that is individual as well as collective. And he also talked about making sure that our ministries were laboratories, that we were experimenting, that we were learning new things, that we were expanding in consciousness, not just staying stuck in one way of thinking. And that, I think, is really important to our unity centers and churches today.
Yes.
How are we expanding in consciousness? How are we continuing, just like Charles and Myrtle, to reach out and to experiment and be a laboratory? I love that word. I love being a laboratory for spiritual ideas and spiritual learning. I think it's our work, and we have a whole new opportunity in front of us.
Lovely.
I think it's
and you know, think of the silence. I think of the silence, which we talk about in Unity, such a Buddhist idea, you know. I think of the 12 powers, which come out from the chakras, you know, another Hindu idea that's and influence of Kabbalah as well. I mean, there's all kinds of influences in Unity that Charles and Myrtle integrated and came up with their own flavor of thing. Yeah, and I think they would encourage us today, wouldn't they, if they were alive, to keep experimenting, to keep unfolding. You know, there's some of us that would love to just have it, just go back to the Fillmorian way of thinking. But I think that could be dangerous because, you know, he and she were always unfolding, learning new things. I reserve the right to change my mind. We like to quote that one, which shows you that, you know, there's an unfoldment in Unity. We're at the break. We're going to talk more about what we're doing in Unity in terms of interfaith in the second part of the show. So join us then.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, celebrating diversity and inclusivity for Pride Month. We are one.
Unity Online Radio is bringing the message of unity to thousands of spiritual seekers around the world. If you enjoy our programming, we invite you to support it by visiting unityonlineradio.org and clicking on Donate Now. Help us continue to provide inspiring content to everyone. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Meditation Minute with Paulette Pipe.
So as always, we begin our time of meditation by first taking account of what we're feeling, those sights that we're seeing, those sensations that we're experiencing, and each breath that we breathe. Notice where in your body you're experiencing those sensations. Let your breathing find its own rhythm as we begin the process of letting go, the process of relaxation. Remember why we're here.
To hear more from Paulette Pipe and Touching the Stillness, visit the archives section at unityonlineradio.org.
What if a handful of ordinary, conservative Americans agreed to visit Egypt and talk to some ordinary Muslims to ask their questions directly and compare their cultures and religions? See hearts and minds open up in the new documentary, Free Trip to Egypt, which chronicles their journey and reveals their insights into Muslims and themselves. Free Trip to Egypt will be screened in 1,000 theaters on June 12th. Find a showing near you at freetriptoegypt.com.
What if you could start each day with a positive outlook, remembering you are a divine expression of God? Daily Word is a booklet of daily devotionals offering positivity that's downright contagious. With a print subscription or by email, you can pause to reflect on how to practice spirituality in your human experience. Reading Daily Word takes about a minute a day, so you can feel uplifted every morning. Visit dailyword.com to subscribe.
Find the truth within yourself that heals, reveals, guides, and transforms. Tune in to Reverend Galen McDowell every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms. Take a deep dive into the practical aspects of New Thought teaching, starting with forgiveness, spiritual healing, prosperity, and more. Reverend McDowell welcomes some amazing guests, and topics can range from reincarnation to the Bible to science. Make plans to join the show here on UnityOnlineRadio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. This is our first in a series of two shows talking about interfaith and unity. And today I'm with Victoria Etchemendi and Ariana Platten. And we're talking about interfaith in general, why it's so important. And also we want to talk in this segment about how we're approaching interfaith in 2019. We talked a little bit about Charles and Myrtle and the fact that they were very eclectic and very open to different religions and modalities and understandings, and that we follow in that tradition. And so we've always been embracing, you know, since I left seminary, you know, I've been allowed, I would say the word is apropos, allowed to do the ministry in any form that I wanted. Obviously, I want to keep it grounded in the unity principles. And in my 30 years, I've quoted a lot from Charles and Myrtle, but also enfolded into it a lot of Buddhist and Hindu and Sufi and mystical ideas throughout my career. And I felt that didn't rob anything from unity. It enriched unity, because when we talk about unity, as you mentioned, Victoria, that word unity, it's an embrace, isn't it? It's an understanding. There's a common thread through everything, and everything is in divine order. You know, sometimes we think life is going to hell in a handbasket, but I like what Shakespeare said. He said, there's a divinity that shapes our ends, rough hew them as we will. And I like that, because sometimes, you know, We rough hew things. This looks like a mess, but it's really the divine in us that is shaping everything, and you know, it's all in divine order. But that doesn't mean we sit back and say, oh well, everything's great. No, it means right now I am part of that divine order, right? I am part of that unfoldment, and I need to move in direction where I am guided by my highest intentions. And we have an intention, which we laid down, how long ago is it now, Victoria, that we started this team?
Well, I proposed to the Unity World Ministries board about 2 years ago, but we've been a collective group circle of people across the country for a little over a year. So it's amazing the work that we are getting to do.
And I know that there's been churches that are already, you know, have reached out in this way, right? We know of several where they have some connection to interfaith. And of course, many of the people on our task team are very active in interfaith endeavors. I mean, you know, Kelly Isler is in Kansas City, and Jan Chase will be on the show next week. And you also and Ariana have been involved in it, obviously. So it's already existing. So what are we trying to do then? We're trying to move it forward, right? And put it more into the consciousness of the movement.
Well, I think what we're... go ahead, Ariana.
I was just going to say, I think putting it in the consciousness, there's kind of two different directions in our interfaith work, John Paul. One of those directions is that we have a seat at the table at the Parliament of the World's Religions, at the United Religions Initiative, at the Festival of Faith, at some of these bigger events that happen in the world, that Unity is a player in the interfaith initiatives that are taking place, which are now really looking at issues that affect us on a global level. And I think Unity has a lot to bring in its way of not falling into crisis thinking, that our way of looking at things, the lens through which we look at things, is important at that table. And then the other piece of our work, which is equally important, is that we gather information on that international level about the influence of faith in the world, and we bring it back into the Unity movement with an interest in motivating all of our field ministries to reach out into their respective communities and find their own seat there. Because it's not just the international groups that are influencing our world, it's what's happening in our local areas as well. So we're wanting to help Unity Ministries understand how to have a seat at their local interfaith table and how to really incorporate Unity teachings in what's happening in their respective areas.
Yes, and, you know, several years ago when I first came into ministry, I don't think, you know, we had that place at the table, right? And I remember that very few people went to the Parliament of World Religions, and now I think the last one, there were several Unity people, and like you said, we're heard now, you know, and that's important, because it doesn't happen overnight, right? You have to do the work over years and decades to become accepted, because once you're accepted, once you have a seat at the table, then, you know, people tend to respect you and hear you. And so it's important that we continue the work over time, right? It's one thing to sort of get excited and then we fall away, but there needs to be a consistency, I think. And that's, to me, is important. And I'm glad we've been, you know, doing that over time, so that there is that sense of they understand who we are now. Because I know some people suspect about Unity, you know, we don't quite fit into the Christian perspective. Sometimes we seem a little strange, but then again, we seem too Christian to fit into other areas, etc. So who are we? But I like to think of ourselves as a mystical tradition, you know, in noble thread that's been unfolding in all religions, you know, for the last several thousand years, and that's a noble thread, you know, to have that practical mysticism pathway. And when I see Unity in that light, you know, it's no longer a little non-denominational movement. It's part of something larger, and I feel brother and sister with Sufis and with mystical Hindus and with Tibetan Buddhists, etc., you know, Native American spiritualities. You know, we are one in that mystical connection.
I so agree with you, and I feel so so much in my soul that Unity has something so valuable to contribute in the world today. And creating this understanding, helping people to understand what Unity is about. I really respect the fact that religions have different things to do, that some religions focus on ancestral understanding and some religions focus on compassion and service to the poor, and some religions focus on the earth and how we care for the earth. And I think one of the powerful, powerful contributions that Unity makes in the world is its focus on consciousness, that we are in the practice of cultivating clear and positive divine consciousness as a presence on the planet. And I know that that's unique to New Thought, and specifically through the lens of metaphysical Bible interpretation, unique to Unity. And I really think that that is a powerful and important thing for us to take out into the world and make available. And the interfaith path is a really good way to do that.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I think the interest is growing throughout Unity. In 1993, I went to the 100th anniversary, and I was the only Unity minister, I think, was there. There might have been a handful of others. At this World Parliament last year, there were over 200 of us, and we were from all over the country. Some of those were also from spiritual life centers, but there is an upsurge, if you will. When I go on websites across the country, actually what I am seeing is the majority of Unity ministries are having some kind of kirtan, something on racial issues, something culturally, something, you know, dialogue with other world religions. It's fascinating. So it's always been at our core, and I think what Unity brings to the bigger stage, to the global stage, is that we have for years, since the Film Wars, incorporated these different pieces from other faiths, and that does make us unique. We have some level of understanding and connection with what other players, other faith traditions bring. So I think it's vital right now, and I began the team with the desire to be visible and to be a voice, not a whisper.
Voice. Very good. Well, you know, I had a couple of professors on my show last week talking about contemplative studies, which is a movement now in many universities throughout the States, and it's burgeoning. You know, there's a wave, as they're calling it, of interest in contemplative studies, especially amongst younger folks, you know, millennials and younger, who want a very practical spirituality. They don't want a lot of dogma. We call it spiritual but not religious, right? But they're not even identifying as that. In some ways, they're identifying as nuns. They don't want anything to do with anything that's a system, you know. They want something very visceral and practical. But to me, that speaks to interfaith, because so much of what they're doing in contemplative studies is a smorgasbord of across the board of techniques, you know, taken from all kinds of religions and presented in a secular way, you know, coming back to that idea that you don't have to have faith to do this, right? It's intercultural as well, multiculturalism. And we can get a rich meaning from these practices without buying into the old ways of looking at the hierarchy of God and whatever else is going on, you know, angels and where we are on that hierarchy. You know, that can all go. We can still have a rich connectedness. And I know Unity started investigating that too, you know, with Linda Martella-Witsit as the Vice President of Silent Unity, our prayer ministry, and she's written the book, you know, How to Pray Without Talking to God, not to get rid of God so much as to have that direct connection to our own divinity without necessarily having the man upstairs, you know, dispensing good to us, right? To understand it's coming at in a different way. So different ways of experimenting with, there's the laboratory again, the laboratory, investigation, right? Which is wonderful. It's like, let's keep this open, yeah? Let's keep it exciting.
So what our team wants to bring to our conference in June, and what we hope to be able to do in regions and in many other ways, is to create workshops and to create interfaith services, just so people... You know, sometimes people feel, well, I have to give up my way. You don't have to give up your way to add something. And so we're not taking away from anything. We're just adding. And once people experience something, they go, oh, I didn't know what that was. And there are a lot of sometimes fear, even in Unity, where we think, well, that's different. I don't understand that. And so we allow our fear to stop us. And if we are willing just to be in a laboratory experimenting, trying something, as we know, in experimenting things, the the experiment doesn't always go perfectly, so we have to retry it and redo it. And I just think it's a time in the history of our movement that that we want to expand this. And I love what Ariana was talking about, consciousness. I mean, that is our purest desire, is to bring a consciousness of oneness.
So let's talk about the two elements that we're presenting at the convention. If you're not familiar, Unity has a convention every year, and it's held in Kansas in Overland Park, in one of the hotels there, and it'll be happening the week of the 17th through the 20th, I think, of June of this month. And we're presenting a workshop and a service. So let's talk about the workshop first.
Well, this workshop is going to be really fun and interactive. It is an opportunity. We're calling it Uncommon Friends. And we're hoping the outcome, you know, anytime you plan anything, I think you have to look at what you want the outcome to be. Why are you doing this? Our hope is multifold. Our hope is that people who have never really stepped into the interfaith conversation, have a place to go where they can learn a little bit more about how they might reach out and what they might come to understand in their interfaith activities. Our hope is that we can give people a chance to stand in the shoes of someone of a different faith, to actually experiment in that field of what does it mean to have an interfaith experience? How does it feel? And how do you actually do what you were just talking about, which is how do you learn about someone else's faith, actually maybe even find something new to add to your own spiritual toolbox and still maintain your own alignment in your personal faith tradition. So we'll be engaged in activities that give you a chance to really look at those things and discuss them. It will be interactive. You'll have a chance to be in discussion with other ministers and to also identify some folks in the Unity movement who can serve in a mentoring role and be available to you if you have questions afterwards.
Yeah, so fascinating hour, I think. What is it going to be, about an
hour
or so?
Hour and a half.
So, yeah. And I know we have a number of people already signed up to come to that.
Yes.
That workshop, but everyone is going to be in Kansas City area during that time is welcome to come, of course, and we're hoping that as many Unity ministers and lay leaders will attend that workshop, because it's going to be quite quite insightful, and we'll have a lot of fun with it too, because that's the essence here. And I know Victoria is very keen on that, is that we don't want to make this dry. You know, this is a juicy subject. There's lots of fun things to do. Want to make it fun, because that's what we practice. We're not going to practice things that are no fun to do, right? That's what I love about Unity. Unity is a way of life that you want to do because it works, you know, and it's fun. We look at difficult things sometimes, because life is tough sometimes. Life is suffering. Sometimes, but there's also a way through that, and to live the authentic life, and to have fun doing it, you know, to experience the juicy bits. I think it was Pema Chodron that really woke me up to that, the great Tibetan Buddhist nun, you know, said, you know, it's not worth doing unless you know you've got some juice going with this, and I love that. It's I think a child came up to her one time at the end of a talk and asked her, because she was talking about how you had to renounce everything and let go. And the child said, does the Buddha wear toe polish? And which is an interesting question. You know, I get your kids to ask these interesting questions. And Pema Chodron thought for a moment. And she turned to the child and she said, yes. and I thought, you know, what was so good about that was, you know, just because you're a Buddhist or you're a practitioner of spirituality doesn't mean that life, you know, has to shift so that you can't enjoy things. You know, you could still wear you know, toe polish or whatever. But, you know, it's, don't get attached to it, maybe. But it doesn't mean you have to give it all up because you're so holy now. I can't enjoy my life. And I've always loved that. And
yeah.
And I think this is part of interfaith, is we're coming together not out of fear, but out of curiosity and joy, right? We want to find out more about the cool things that they're doing, or even the strange things that they're doing, because I'm interested enough to find out more than just what I've heard. And this is huge. So we're hoping to present something that will guide you through that, so to help you reach out to more people. So it's just a beginning, right, of some an adventure that you could be on. Then we've got the service. So tell us about that.
Service, and that's Wednesday night, and that's open to the public. And Kelly Isola, one of our team members, is president of the Kansas City Interfaith Council, and they're putting together a wonderful event. And this is a great opportunity to get to experience Sufi and Sikh and Native American drumming and music and chanting and meditation. And that will be held in Overland Park, where we're having our conference. You can look online and find out more about that. I believe it's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening. That's June 19th. And it's just going to be a wonderful opportunity to take a deep breath and allow yourself to try on, to experience, to be moved by the teachings and the rituals from other spiritual traditions. So it'd be great to have as many people as possible at that event.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we'll talk more about it next week as well. Because Kelly knows a lot about that particular service and what's planned. She's going to give us a further insight into it. And hope you can, if you're, like you say, in that area, come along and enjoy that experience. All right, so we have about 5 minutes left. I just want to ask each of you in very personal terms now, you know, what this has done for you, your interaction in terms of interfaith on your personal spiritual journey, and not just all the things you've done, because we've talked about those, but how has it deepened you? What have you found that you didn't have before? What's been some of the breakthrough moments for you? Are you willing to share about that?
Yeah, I think probably the most important thing for me is that I've come to appreciate difference in a different way. I think at some point growing up, and I grew up in the Catholic faith, I think I kind of assumed at some point in my life that all religions were really the same. They were talking to the same God. They saw God differently, but they were all doing the same things. They were all focused on the same things. And I just kind of inherently believed that all of them were supposed to do the same thing. And what has really changed for me in coming to look at culture and faith and how these religions actually were initiated, what problems they came out of, what I've really learned is different faiths offer solutions to different things. Just like we look at the plants in nature and say, you know, some plants are healing, some are for beauty, some are industrial in purpose. You know, they're all different. Religions each do something different. They offer us different understandings of life. And that coming to look at faith and value the difference and look for the importance of the difference has really been life-changing for me.
Very good.
Well, for me, my mother worked with international students from around the world, and they would live with us for a couple of weeks while they got initiated into America. This was in the 50s, and they came from all over the world and all different faiths. And I got to experience these incredible wise people, mostly men from around the globe, And my mother would have coffees once a month. And here were people who were at war in their own countries, who were from a variety of faith traditions, and they all showed each other the pictures of their children. And I realized I was 8, 9 years old that we're all the same. And I had a spiritual aha as a child that I don't want to offend anyone, but that Jesus wasn't an only child, that there were many spiritual teachers, that there were many ways of looking at things. And so that has just brought me throughout my life, kind of like a ribbon. And to have this opportunity now to work with these fantastic people who have the same passion and the same commitment is really not to make a difference, but to be part of the difference is it's truly been a blessing.
Yeah, excellent, beautiful. And I think for me, since I was a child, listening to Bible stories and then reading the Bible a little bit as a teenager, I had this visceral experience of Jesus walking around my hometown, you know, and interacting with the people there and being in different places in the town. And so it wasn't an experience that happened 2,000 years ago. It was happening in my real world. And I've taken that with me, that idea that, you know, the numinous, the spiritual is everywhere present. And so everywhere you go, you see that. And that's been my experience anyway. And traveling to India when I was in my early 20s and getting involved with various religions was just part of that, seeing that the mystical, the presence of the divine is everywhere apparent, just shows up in different guises and forms. And those are wonderful because they're part of the incredible variety of this earth. So when I look at different religions, I always see that commonality, that mystical commonality within the diversity, and not to take away from the diversity, because I love what Ariana is saying. Each is there to fulfill something unique, right? Yeah. But that's enriched my own life too, because I take on parts of Buddhism, parts of Hinduism, parts of Sufism. But I'm still Christ-centered, you know, and I still think Jesus is the man, you know, because he's such a great spiritual psychologist, but involving everything. Folks, we're at the end of the show. Like we said, next week, Reverend Jan Chase, Reverend Kelly Isler with us, talk about interfaith again. But right now, let me say goodbye to Ariana and Victoria. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
And thanks for listening in, folks. Hope to talk to you next week. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology. Available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.